Hey everybody, welcome to Surface Level, curious conversations about the Black and queer experience. I'm one of your hosts, Tony, and today, Jordan, Damon, and I are discussing the plight of queer romance from the 1950s through present day. Today, we are thrilled to welcome Noah J. Ricketts to our Surface Level family.
Oh my gosh.
And I wanted to humanize Frankie, even the drag side of things. I didn't want it just to be performance. I really hope that this character opens the door to so many other marginalized voices to have the stage, you know?
As a queer person, I was watching and it was just like, that seems like actual sex that gay people have. Mm-hmm. Everybody wants more. It's just how can we tell a story that's already layered, that's already human, and how do you add that layer to it that we know exists?
I think we need a season two. I think that's what it is.
What do we have to do to get a season two?
What do we need a spinoff?
And since Noah's background has a background in theater, we wanted to highlight the legendary Andre DeShields, who's an actor, singer, dancer, director, and choreographer, and. This is Fellow Travelers.
Right.
Is that my radio voice?
Is that your radio voice?
Yes, that is my radio voice. And today, I am super excited because we have a very timely topic and episode and guest. I know we're excited. And I know that our listeners are going to be even more excited. So I'm going to go ahead and do a quick introduction. So, today's guest has dazzled audiences from the Broadway stage to your TV screens at home and beyond. He is part of the incredibly talented cast and one of our recent favorite limited series that everybody's talking to right now called Fellow Travelers, which is now a Critics' Choice Awards winner. So, congratulations. And you can find this series on Paramount Plus with the Showtime plan. Listen. Keep that detail in mind. Trust me, you're going to want to spend that money because it's so worth it. You know, Damon, Jordan, and I really loved the series. I cried. I know these girls. Well, maybe not Damon, but Jordan definitely cried. But anywho, today we are thrilled to welcome Noah J. Ricketts to our Surface Level family.
Oh my gosh. Thank you. That was such a beautiful introduction. I'm still stuck on dazzled.
You dazzled. You know, very Broadway.
I'm going to hire you to introduce me everywhere. This is great. Thank you for having me.
Very dazzling. So, for Noah and some of our listeners who maybe are just tuning in for the first time, this season has been all about reflection and reflecting on icons of our past, some that are still here. This one happens to be still with us, and he is a legend. And since Noah's background has a background in theater, we wanted to highlight the legendary Andre DeShields, who's an actor, singer, dancer, director, and choreographer, and. He became famous on Broadway for performances in The Wiz, Ain't Misbehavin', Play On, and The Full Monty, and has achieved countless honors, including a Tony Award at the age of 73, which, fun fact, was at the 73rd Annual Tony Awards. Oh. So get into that.
He's 20th century Rob today.
And it was for his role as Hermes, am I saying that right?
Yeah.
Hermes in the musical Hadestown. Am I saying that right?
Yeah.
you want to say things right. And so I want everyone to do themselves a favor and get into Andre DeShields' work. Mm-hmm. You will not be disappointed. And so to get us started here today, we're going to have a little fun. Our game, our icebreaker game, is which we do every episode with guests. We want to get everyone warmed up. You've got your tea. We've lubed up our hands. We got our lotion on. Yes. No one's asked you today. So we're going to do Showtime Dilemmas. I'm going to give you all precarious predicaments where you choose how you'd react. And so I want to see just what kind of girl or showgirl everyone is. So the first one here. You're part of a grand musical finale. Do you choose to do an over-the-top tap dance or a soaring high note? Which one are you choosing? Noah?
I'm doing the high note.
You're doing the high note?
I hate tap dance. No, I don't hate when other people do it. I hate when I do it.
Okay.
And growing up, I had to do tap dance like class like all the time. Mm-hmm. I'm still mortified from it, so I'm picking the high note.
You take the high note. Well, Jordan, what about you? I know you're a dancer in your past life.
I am a dancer in my current life.
Oh, okay. Ah!
Retired. Yeah. She's retired.
She's back on the pole.
She's back on the pole.
She got to pay them bills.
I am. But you know, I admittedly, I'm not that great at tap. Mm-hmm. So I would lean into my second skill set, which is singing. And I would do
my secondary skill set.
Lying.
I need a list of all these skills.
Oh my God. I'll do it all.
I'm going to say what sings.
Variety.
It was great.
How about you, Damon?
I am nobody's dancer. I'm also a baritone, so I don't know how high the note's going to get. But the highest we're going to get in my range is what I'm
going to
give you.
No. For the sake of the game, we're going to act like we all have dancing and singing capabilities, and I'm going to mash them up.
Oh.
And really make it a grand finale. I'm going to dance and hit that high note.
Oh, no, that's right.
So we'll get into that.
Go ahead.
All right, so you have the lead role in a play. Is it something along the lines of a classic play that you would be leading in that role, or a modern comedy? You want to make people laugh. How are we feeling? Are we feeling moody? Are we feeling jovial?
I want to go with the classic.
Okay.
I want to go with the classic. I mean, there's some really good plays out there. I feel like a classic play is where I'd probably lean.
Mm. Okay. Jordan?
Comedy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Get into comedy. That.
You know, I, yeah.
Her third skill set is a comedian.
She's a comedy queen. That's three.
That's actually two.
Oh, it's two.
Yeah.
Oh,
okay. Singing,
then
jokes, comedy. And then
two
dance.
A, two B.
Oh, singing is first.
I thought you were going to say dancing.
Singing is the ultimate.
Is the next question going to be about rap? Because I want to know where that falls on the
right. Oh, well, that's, well, stay that's, tuned.
Yeah.
Stay tuned.
Stay okay. curious.
Stay curious.
I'll do a classic. Like, who doesn't want to be in like an August Wilson play or something? Like, yeah.
I like the classics too, but I'm going to change my answer and go with comedy because I feel like it's harder to make people laugh.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sorry.
Everybody can't get up on a stage and make people laugh.
I just thought about you took your mom to see the piano. I said, Jordan, how was it? She said, long.
What? What was that?
Jordan went to see the piano lesson.
Oh,
I was
when
just
he
like,
went to
what
see
did
the
you
piano
think?
Lesson, how was it? Long.
Who
I
said
liked
that?
The piano.
You Who said that?
Why
you said
airing
that?
My dirty laundry? Y'all know I have a short attention span.
August Wilson is rolling.
Okay, well, speaking of dirty laundry, a set malfunction occurs mid-performance. Would you improvise and turn it into a comedic moment, or would you break character and address the technical hiccup head on?
I've experienced this too many times.
So yeah. what did you do?
I think I've actually done both because okay. I did Frozen, which was super tech heavy, yeah. And that thing would fucking break all the time. Like every 2 weeks, like the iceberg would like stop in the middle of the thing. So one time when it gets too long, you just have to acknowledge it with everybody in the room. You got to be like, I'm sorry, we'll be right back. And then you exit the stage. So I've done both.
Damon said, what's your answer?
No, I think it's the same.
Oh, I thought you said,
No, I was thinking about two things that I've just witnessed recently. Like me and my husband went and saw The Lion King for the first, he saw it for the first time, like last week.
Okay.
Y'all, I think young Simba got sick or something.
I know.
But it was like, and I'm not laughing because the kid got sick. But it was like right as Mufasa swings out before he dies or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then the curtain closed. They were like, we're sorry. We have to come back
Yikes.
In 10 minutes. But he was like laying there dead because he had just fallen because Scar just killed him. It was the strangest time to be like, sorry, y'all. Give us a minute.
Right.
Then I thought about when we went to see Beyonce in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And that fucking tank didn't come out.
It didn't go all the way down. It
stayed and right I kept the sitting there thinking, I was just like, why is Something she singing right. partition back there behind the curtain on that car? Right. And then Jordan was like, the tank's supposed to drive out. I was like, okay.
I said, the tank came out in Barcelona.
Then we saw her next week. The tank did come out.
The tank came out. I was amazed.
Well, what about you, Jordan? The malfunction happens. Are you malfunctioning?
No, I'm rolling with the punches and I'm turning it into an improv skit because, as you know,
comedy
is number two.
Comedy's number two. Okay.
She's doing a pole dance down the Brooklyn iceberg.
We're probably going to improvise. You know, the show must go on. Mm-hmm. And when I think about Beyonce, since you brought her up, she's had a couple of hiccups. You know, when Alien Superstar, I think, was happening in her performance and... The stage.
Those dancers were down on that floor.
Yeah. Oh, the music stopped.
The music completely stopped. That's the one time the show actually had to stop because she, you know, it was just giving and mother like sashayed off the stage. But think about another time when mother got her hair caught in a fan and she did not stop.
We do not need the head movement, Tony. You do not need to give me a flashback like that.
The show must go on. All right, two more. You're asked to participate in an improv session during a live show. Would you engage in spontaneous Shakespearean dialogue or create a modern rap battle with a fellow cast member? Which is it going to be?
Definitely a rap battle. Yes. Definitely a rap battle.
We can battle each other. Oh, I'm definitely doing a rap battle too.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I'm not doing a classic Shakespearean anything, so mm-hmm. let's go with the rap battle.
Good. All right. Well, so rap shit. The revival.
I would love a rap shit revival.
Lastly, you have the option to perform a solo number or be part of a show-stopping ensemble routine. Which would you choose for maximum impact? Now let's see. We're gonna see who's who. Depending on your answer, this is gonna tell me a lot about the type of person you are. A show-stopping ensemble routine or a solo performance to maximize the impact.
Ensemble routine.
Okay.
Because it's when you like when you're doing a dance number with like a group of people that you like, mm-hmm. there's nothing better than that. It's like family fun. You know what I mean? So yeah. I that's the one I'm going to pick. Now I know what you're going to say.
No, what am I going to say?
The singer and the comedy queen. She's a solo act.
Well, no, I was actually going to say the same thing as you.
Oh, now she's
because,
not.
Because getting into my
We need a lie button.
Actually, no.
We need another button. Lie.
Right, lie button. Nothing can replace the sensation of getting on stage with a bunch of people and performing a number. I know from my experience of doing the illustrious Howard University Homecoming.
Okay.
And you go on that stage and you're there with all the people.
The last time you were on stage, a decade ago.
13 years ago.
I will never forget it. Right. I will never forget it. But no, yeah, I think that if you want maximum impact, in my opinion, like I think that there's so much more that you can do with more people on the stage. Mm. And then it's just like, it's more stimulation in my opinion. And I think it's more interesting to look at from my perspective.
Okay.
You know, I'm going to go with the group just because I can't be out there hollering and I'm telling you by myself every fucking night.
Not in that baritone.
Not in that baritone. It is too much. You got to really deliver that thing. And if it's off, nobody wants to hear you softly sing that. Like, you got to do it.
Can you do it for us now?
Can you do it 8 times a week? Exactly. Not even right now.
Right.
Yeah, no, I like the ensemble moment, but I definitely would be center. I'm still going to be, the spotlight will be on us.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a brighter spot on you.
And there's a glimmer sheen.
It's like Wicked, but you're like that witch. They raise you up out of the floor. Yeah, right.
So you're doing Run the World, but you got the blonde wig on. Right.
That part. And lastly, for Noah, we asked this to all of our guests.
Uh-oh.
And not too much pressure. Okay. We just want to know, what are you curious about?
I'm curious about how you guys know each other.
Ooh. We're a throuple. We started as a throuple.
These are my husbands.
Husbands. Yes. Okay, great.
No, the long story short is that we all went to Howard University.
Oh, okay.
Together over a decade ago at this point, right?
Mm-hmm. Centuries.
We graduated in 2011. So it's been some time and we all, we won't get into the details of who met who when, but we became close friends, really, the three of us together once we graduated and all found ourselves in New York City.
Ah.
And so that began Destiny's Child, Dream Girls.
DC3.
DC3. So yeah, right. That's the long and the short of it.
I love that. Yeah. Now I'm scared to ask who's who in the Destiny's Child, because I know this could start a couple of fights.
Well, thankfully, now that it's just three of us, we can all sing lead.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So before we had an issue with that. But yeah, you know, we all sing lead. And everybody's Beyonce at some point.
You don't have to send anyone's
luggage.
It's
a very political answer, you know.
All right, now, so before we get started, I wanted to give our listeners just the quick and dirty of what Fellow Travelers is about. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to get this complete, so I want people to just go watch the show, as I mentioned at the top, but I do want to give some context for people who just may not have ever heard of the show or watched the show, don't know anything about it. So Fellow Travelers is a decades-long chronicle of the risky, volatile, and steamy relationship between two men who fall in love at the height of the 1950s Lavender Scare. That was a time in which you could lose your job just based on someone presuming that you might be gay. Mm-hmm. And I want folks to go and do their research on the Lavender Scare as well. The story spans through the Vietnam War protests of the 60s, the drug-fueled disco culture of the 70s, and the AIDS crisis of the 80s. That alone makes me want to go watch as a gay black mm-hmm. man or queer black man. And I think that we all jumped at, you know, the excitement around the show was a groundswell. And I didn't watch it at first, not because I didn't want to, but it was like, I think Damon was the first, like, y'all seen this show, Fellow Travelers? They having sex. okay, let me get into it. And it was very artful and tasteful. So I think we loved that. But we want to start here because, Noah, your character, Frankie, is we want to put a spotlight there because it's really one of the most marginalized characters in the series. Mm-hmm. And so we can't have this conversation without talking about this black, gender nonconforming drag queen whose stage name is Stormé.
Stormé is actually another character. Stormé is based on a real it's a real person.
Okay.
So I don't know if Frankie has a official drag name. I like to say it's Frankini, but Stormé.
Yes! Yeah. We had Olivia Lux on earlier this season. And
it's amazing.
I think one season we talked about our drag names as well. and which was also fun. And Drag Race is out right now, the new season. Which we love.
Oh, yeah.
So watching last night. With talking about this character, how did embodying your character provide you with a unique opportunity to shed light on perspectives from one of the most marginalized characters in the show? Like, what did that bring for you? How did that feel?
I mean, it was frightening, honestly, at first. It was, because I recognized that I was, like, you know, the front of a group that I necessarily wasn't a part of. And I was the voice of, like, something so much greater than myself. And so that alone was very terrifying at first, I will not lie. But then I saw it as a huge opportunity because, like, you know, no one really gives voice to these drag queens in television and in film in the way that they need to be represented. And, like, to have that on a major platform and prestige TV felt like a great honor. And so I tried to take on that challenge, you know, with heart and mm-hmm. openness. And I think a lot of the times when I watch TV and film, drag queens are represented as this, like, kind of like otherworldly, I'm so fierce type of thing. But there's so much heart behind that. And there's also, like, so much fear and terror, like, just being yourself in the world. And so I wanted to show that part of it as well. I mean, there's a lot of things I could talk about.
No, yeah, I'm so glad that we got to, like, experience that and watch the character evolve. And also in that, like, thinking about that time, mm-hmm. You know, drag queens are still facing a lot of scrutiny present day.
Yeah.
And so when we think about back then, even more so.
Yeah.
And just to have that shown in a way that we don't get to see a lot is, I think, you know, admirable of the show, of the folks who put that together, of you for portraying it. And it's very brave.
Yeah.
It's very brave because if you feel like there's pressure on you to get it right.
Yeah.
And you have a whole community of folks looking at you.
Mm-hmm. And I wanted to, like, humanize Frankie, even the drag side of things. I didn't want it just to be performance. That's why we were really pressing hard, you know, my co-star Jelani and I, about, like, what happens behind the scenes? Like, mm-hmm. those moments in the apartment where they're trying to deal with their messed up relationship and the nuances of that. Like, I really hope that this character, like, opens the door to so many other marginalized voices to, like, have the stage, you know?
Absolutely.
No, with regards to, so you got this opportunity. It's a big opportunity. And you have nerves about, you know, portraying this character. What was your process of, I guess, becoming more comfortable or more confident falling into that role or stepping into that role?
Well, the first thing is, like, research, research, research.
Yeah.
And, like,
in doing that, it was scary to me to realize like how much erasure has actually happened of queer history. Because like when you go back and try to find the material, it's not that easy. And so I was trying to find very specific material, like information on drag queens in the 1950s, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Queens of color, you know. And I've stumbled upon this documentary called P.S. Burn This Letter, Please, which is basically a collection of letters sent from drag queens in New York City in the 1950s to this Hollywood agent. And someone discovered it when they were like cleaning out his house or, yeah, after he died. And it's all of these amazing stories about their lives, like dealing with the police, stealing wigs from the Metropolitan Opera. Like it's amazing. And so from those letters, I was able to kind of piece together Frankie's experience and feel more confident in portraying it authentically.
Love that.
Yeah.
Cool. So I want to highlight an article that I came across. I think it was People Magazine. And it was written by the actor Wilson Cruz.
Oh, yeah.
And in this article, he points out that there's a theme, an overarching theme of shame in fellow travelers. And he goes into a quote from James Baldwin, and I'm going to put my specs on for this. The words are very tiny on this screen.
Give us your best James Baldwin.
what I won't do is that. So the quote says this: "It took many years of vomiting up all the filth I'd been taught about myself and half believed before I was able to walk on earth as though I had a right to be here." Let that sink in. When you think about shame, I mean, it's very deep. And I want to know from each of us if there's a character that, or a moment from fellow travelers that we personally relate to as it pertains to shame and being yourself. And how did that come out or come out for you from one of the characters?
I would say two thematic things that happened in the show. One, I have been someone Skippy at some point where you're just like in this dynamic where this person's not out. They are a little older. They have this level of, there's this power dynamic that exists. And I think some much younger gay period in my life or queer period in my life where I was realizing that, not that we have to be public about the things we talk about, but like being at equal levels of comfort in our sexuality were important to me when having romantic relationships. And you go through all the way through the show lasts four decades. And even it took what, Hawk, 50 years or however long that span was or 30 years to get to a place of saying, I want to be here for you. And it was something that I learned that like, I can't wait for someone to want to be here. And I think that that level, and I remember those instances with that person where we'd be out and there's this feeling of like trying to hide and make sure people don't clock that this is not just like friends or it's a little romantic. And I think that that was something that I had to learn from that character. And I think with Frankie specifically, as I've grown older, there's a sense of wanting to become more radical in my feelings around queer revolution, wanting to be more radical in the space I take up as a Black person. And I think that oftentimes in our community, and particularly me being having a lot of friends who we have our degrees and our careers, and there's this hesitancy with even people you're close with in kind of tapping into those parts of ourselves. And I think that was something that I saw that parallel between him and Marcus's character. I'm like, I have friends in my life, and it's nothing wrong with people getting to where they get in the time it takes them to get there. But it was something where I realized that I was having to step outside of maybe being okay to step outside on things on my own. And not being ashamed of saying like, no, actually, I believe this. And this is how I feel differently about sexuality. And this is how I feel differently about how we show up for Black lives. This is why I feel differently about how we show up for different people for their gender expression. And I don't give a fuck about what the person that doesn't understand it in my job thinks. Or I don't care about if this doesn't fit squarely in the realm of academia. And that was something, as I was thinking about the characters who I thought were really complex, were parallels I saw to my life and to Moments of Shame.
Yeah. I mean, I'm thinking about just the relationship dynamics between Tim and Hawkins. Mm-hmm. And I know that there's been instances in my life where I've probably dealt with someone that was more closeted or hasn't come out, if you will, hasn't decided to choose to express who they are fully and own that, and having the shame of being one way with someone behind closed doors and really wanting to be our full selves
out, everywhere,
like walking in the park, having dinner. Like, there was a moment where I think Tim said something like, we could be brothers, or we could be, you know, why does this have to be, you know, we're going out of our way to hide a thing where, let's just hide in plain sight. I think that's what he was saying, that, you know, suggesting. And I distinctly remember having moments where I would experience that shame myself, and it didn't feel good. It doesn't feel good.
Yeah.
And that's what causes a lot of trauma. And I think that played out for Tim throughout the entire series. It was such a trauma. Like, some of my friends who watched, they were like, they hated Hawkins. They were just like, I hate his ass. They were just like, he did this and that, and he's doing all this to Tim. I can't believe he went to jail, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, bitch. I was like, let's talk about what's going on in your world, because it's triggering. It's very triggering.
Yeah. There was a specific scene between Marcus and Frankie that really stood out to me.
Oh, okay.
And it was when Marcus was talking about his dreams of working in journalism and feeling as if you know, a life in journalism and a life as a outwardly proud gay man couldn't coexist. And I think that that really resonated with me, because I felt like coming into myself and trying to figure out where I wanted to be as an adult, I always felt like I had to negotiate parts of my sexuality to be able to grow, you know, that part of my life. Like, I knew I wanted to always be in entertainment, but I'm just like, but how many gay people are really there? Like, do I need to tone down the gayness? Does that mean I need to, like, make distance with myself between the gayness? And I felt like that was really relatable in watching him sort of process that and, like, be able to articulate that as well. It was very tense, very emotionally tense conversation. But yeah, that stuck out to me, and it definitely was something where I had a lot of shame around, where I was just kind of like, okay, butch it up when you go into the office. You know, we're not at we're not in our safe spaces at the club or at, you know, with our friends in the community anymore. We have to take into account that the people who we are working with have the decision or the decision power to take us out of these positions if they feel like they don't align with who we are. So, yeah, I think that that was something that really resonated with me, and him just processing, like, how he can own his identity while also pursuing his passion.
Yeah,
it's so it's such a layered existence, I find. Like, the holding blackness and queerness and, like, the intersectionality of all of that. Like, I feel like that's the biggest response we've gotten from people, like, from DMs and emails and things. It's like, wow, I finally see myself and the full layered existence on screen, because I feel like sometimes you get one or the other. You're lucky to get one or the other.
Yeah.
And, you know, Wilson Cruz, like, wrote that beautiful thing, and he highlights me in it, and I was so honored, because when I was getting into this, like you, I didn't see any black gay actors out there. I mean, that was the beacon of hope, like Wilson Cruz. And so, gosh, it makes me emotional, because, you know, my audition scene was like the one with the nails, like where he takes off his nail polish. Frankie takes off his nail polish to just be with Marcus.
That's when I cried.
I know. And
specifically, that's when I cried.
She cried every 5 minutes.
I cried too, because, like, God, it's so real. And, like, I remember, I mean, not that even that long ago, morphing myself to try and, like, be liked or be loved or be accepted or just get a damn job.
Yeah.
And I realized it wasn't until I started fully being myself and accepting myself and painting my nails and being as fabulous as I wanted to that my career actually started to thrive because I made space for who I really was. And like, I think that's the beautiful takeaway from all of that crazy struggle is that like you can be you, and that is the thing that makes you so special.
Yeah, it's like something I always go back to from a mentor of mine, but she says like, you have to go through it to get through it. Mm. And she speaks about managing through the noise, not to the noise. And so there's a lot of outside factors that come into play as it relates to shame, and a lot of people who put that on you and they don't even realize that they're doing it. Mm-hmm. And so working through that shame is part of the journey, and getting to the other side, I feel like, is where you find that freedom, which is beautiful. One of the things that I think Jordan started to talk about, or maybe you just said the word sexuality, and I was like, yeah, we're going to get to that sex part. Let's talk about that sex part. Because sex played a prominent role in the story and really the relationship dynamics between Tim and Hawkins. It was hot and steamy. It really went there.
Yeah.
Like, it really went there. And it was, but it was like, I don't know if I've seen recently sexual scenes between men that were just really, I was like, wait, I'm feeling away. Mm-hmm. However, on the flip side of that, between Marcus and Frankie, it was not so much. Mm-hmm. There was sex, but it wasn't as, I don't know. It was
connected to the story.
I don't know. I wonder if that was a missed opportunity. I think we have talked about the longing for maybe wanting a little bit more of that action between Marcus and Frankie. So what do you guys think? Was that a missed opportunity? Was
I think we have to start there.
Oh, you know, God, it's so tricky because like we went from, I feel the same way. Like, I think a lot of people feel the same way. They want more of Marcus and Frankie's storyline. I also want more. And it's like, God, like we went from like not being on screen to being on screen and just getting a little bit, and we want so much more. So like the things that we fought for were actually like just developing the relationship and having the audience know us just as well as they knew, you know, Hawk and Tim. And so, like, I learned in those spaces, like, you have to, like, pick your battles. Like, you have to fight for the things that you want. And we fought for nuanced, layered relationship between them that wasn't just him having sex with a drag queen every once in a while and then you not seeing us. We wanted some context and some subtext there. And so, like, we also talked a lot about, like, our differing relationships, like, we are different from the white couple in the series.
Yeah.
And we kind of were like, we want all of our sex to come out of like art and interest and intellectual interest. So like our first moment of connection is out of him like reading me that poem where I'm like so fascinated by the human that we just can't help but go like this. Mm-hmm. And our next one is out of me performing that Santa Baby where we go upstairs and he's like, I don't know what it is about you, but that drag persona made me have to take those clothes off. So we try to not make it fucking like rabbits. We wanted to have it be a little more nuanced, but the flip side of that is we want more Marcus and Frank.
It sounds like you all had an active part in sort of molding the storyline. Mm. What was that process like, where you all had the opportunity to just speak directly with the director or with the writers? How did that work?
Yeah, you know, Ron Nyswanner, who wrote the show, is amazing. He was very open to our experience because, you know, our characters are not in the book. Like, you know, we're not there. Mm-hmm. And so when we came on to set, Jelani and I have known each other for like 8 years, and we're straight shooters, and we're like, okay. So we were just like, you know, black relationships are different from white relationships. Mm-hmm. Like, they are different. They function differently. And this is what we think will actually be realistic. And they were just very receptive to that because they accepted that they didn't know our experience. So that was really cool. So we talked a lot to the showrunner and then the directors as well, like Dan Menahan, our wonderful director. So collaborative.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that.
You know, I think like watching it was interesting for two things. I think for Tim and Hawk, the way the sex was handled. As a queer person, I was watching and it was just like, that seems like actual sex that gay people have.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why I think part of it is like this longing for like, oh, we wish we had that there. Mm-hmm. Because I think so often you watch these things and you're just like, and it's like, I'm like, that doesn't feel
it's like
right.
Watching a flower bloom.
Yeah.
But no, these sex scenes are like this is what's going down tomorrow night.
The first episode, he said, "You daddy's good boy." I texted him. I said, "You all need to
that
watch."
Role
I said,
"Baby girl."
But further, like I think even when we talk about the dynamics of the characters, just like we think about like a more femme presenting character and you put them in a role and sexually.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what does it mean if they don't exist in that role? Like how can are there things I think to explore thinking about like Black queer people in our maybe aversion to a more feminine top or whatever social thing you want to put in it, mm-hmm. that you can talk about through sex. And I think the thing is, yeah, we everybody wants more. It's just, yeah. Like how can we tell a story that's already layered, that's already human, right. And how do you add that, mm-hmm. layer to it that we know exists? And I think that was just something I thought a lot about. Like I've seen interviews with the director talking about how they use sex throughout the show for that relationship and how it evolved into the final sex scenes. And I thought it was fascinating. And I think that's more of the reason I think that as viewers, we're just like, we want more of that, not just because it's like, great, hot guys, great, whatever, but it felt real. Like when you talk about seeing yourself on scene, it's on screen, you're seeing the wholeness.
Yeah.
And that sexuality is often like, oh, that's the dirty thing that happens, mm-hmm. or that's the thing that we want to allude to, but we don't want to like show. And I think, mm-hmm. when you stand 10 toes down on it, not only do you show it, but you show that it's beautiful. You show that it plays into the dynamics of how those individuals interact outside of sexual situations.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why it's just like a show that does it so well. It's just like, okay, how does everybody fuck on here? And how does that encourage how all the dynamics of all the relationships? So,
and I like to think too on the flip side of it, because no matter how you slice it, the internet is going to have something to say, and they're and it's going to, mm-hmm. be, why ain't do this and why they ain't do that. That's how they sound, right?
That's how they sound. Why,
they should, yeah. I think that there could have been an argument to be made that when Black folks are showing up on screen, that we're over-sexualized.
Mm-hmm.
And now, you know, if it was to be more of a hot and heavy, steamy sexual experience on screen between Frankie and Marcus, what would folks say about that too? I don't know. We don't know, but I'm just putting that out there.
I would agree with that. And to your point about the sex feeling real, it is because we had a very gay crew. We had a very gay directors, right? Like, and you would think when you do these queer narratives that that's always the case. Mm-hmm. It is not always the case. Mm-hmm. I mean, talk about over-sexualized. My first scene on TV, I'm at a sex party having sex with the lead and was supposed to be full frontal, fully naked. And it's a queer sex party. There's a trans girl in the scene. There's like bi couples. There's a lot of stuff going on. The entire crew and director is straight. So they're looking to us to kind of like
direct.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And it's like, I came here just to like act.
I'm already naked.
Like, I'm literally already naked.
Now, what do we do next, Noah?
Yeah.
Should I send you an invoice for the directing as well?
Right. Like, so, you know, that is why it feels real. It's because like we had these conversations, yeah. about how does it go down in real life for us as gay men? And that's how it goes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like back to the social media part, like the internet commentary thing, I think it would have been great. Like to have people have those conversations. Damon, what you brought up, I think that, you know, portraying sexual activity, but like coloring outside the boxes. And so not having, you know, the more feminine character taking the more submissive sexual role,
mm-hmm.
I think would have been really, really interesting for the internet to talk about. I think about P-Valley and all the conversation around Uncle Clifford taking, yeah. on a more dominant role within, mm-hmm. Some of the sex scenes. So, yeah, that would have been really interesting. But I also get the flip side too of like, this is a largely white ensemble cast, and this is the sole Black couple. And, you know, if we're already trying to figure out, like, how to make their stories bigger, what are we, you know, what are we latching on to, and what are we choosing to, to tell? So I get that as well, the editing responsibility.
And the real answer is we need more Black queer art.
And
everywhere.
A season two. I think we need a season two. I think that's what it is.
What do we have to do to get a season two? Who
are, what do we need to spin off?
You gotta call Lena Waithe. You didn't hear it. She loves the show. Loves the show. I'm like, write it, baby. We're here for it.
Okay, yeah. Well,
that's funny.
We'll see what we can do about that. Yeah. Just, you know, we just surface level over here. But bringing it back to the icon that we're honoring for this episode, Andre DeShields. He had three cardinal rules, and DeMond, correct me if I'm wrong, when he gave the speech. Was it at the Tony?
It was his Tony speech.
When he won, oh my goodness. I'm going to put my glasses on for this.
Uh-oh. 73 at the 73rd annual Tony.
73 at the 73rd. That was, bitch, made to my 73rd. We are going to have a time. So, the cardinal rules, number one, surround yourself with people whose eyes light up when they see you coming.
Hmm.
Two, slowly is the fastest way to get to where you want to be. And three, the top of one mountain is the bottom of the next. Mm. So keep climbing. So as we reflect on the character Frankie, what rule for us, As we reflect on the character Frankie, what is the rule that playing him or watching him has taught us? What cardinal rule do you have?
Live authentically, even when it's hard. I think that would be Frankie's cardinal rule. Like, no matter how hard it is, show up authentically as yourself every single day. And I mean, that's the biggest gift I got from playing him, was like looking in the mirror and being like, am I walking out that door truly as who I am inside? So I think that's Frankie's cardinal rule.
Yeah, I think that's accurate, because I had something very similar, and it went back to the park scene on the bench when Frankie left disappointed.
Oh yeah.
And in multiple ways, disappointed in what Marcus had to say, disappointed in showing up not as their full self, and not having the red polish versus just the gloss. And I think Frankie said, I should have worn the red.
Yeah.
Like, I should have did my damn nails the way I wanted to, bitch.
Yeah.
Frankie's like, rule. Wear the red polish.
So that's the rule, right? Wear the red polish. Like, I wrote down the cardinal rule was to always choose you, even if it makes others uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Everybody want to talk about the red polish. Everybody want to talk about the... That was my answer, too. I think that what that scene symbolized for me was that... you can be radical and fragile at the same time. I think that when people think about people who are radically advocating for justice, or even drag queens in general being seen as these fearless, very confident, you know, beings, it was beautiful in that scene, and that's why I cry, to see that even though Frankie had all this confidence and all of this fearlessness and was radical and fighting, to see Frankie like not be the full expression of themselves because they wanted the love. They wanted the acceptance of somebody who they loved. And I think that what it taught me is that real strength lies in not only fighting for change, but also embracing your vulnerabilities and feeling comfortable expressing them.
Gonna make me cry.
We can cry together, because that scene, I played that scene back. I was
listen,
just
I'll
like,
get you, I'll get you your Candace Dillard.
my paper, my triangle,
a little square, yeah, little corner.
You know, often on this show, and actually, it plays a lot into our theme of reflection for the season. But we say, like, just be yourself. Everybody else they'll catch up. And I think looking at the character, I want to kind of amend that and say, be yourself. Who cares if they catch up? And I think about you, if you take a character that leans more feminine in the 50s and you carry that through the end of the show, and you take the show and you carry it into life today, individuals who are Frankie in the world are still looked down on, marginalized, et cetera. So the world still hasn't caught up, but that's not a means to say that you shouldn't be the version of yourself. And maybe at some point it does. Maybe you don't live to see it. But I think that you will live a more fruitful life in any of us, no matter what our area of marginalization may be, if you do it now, regardless of what's going on around you, it's most important.
This is off script, but I want to give any of us, like, there are any final thoughts that any of us have, or you, Noah, just as we reflect, like, I really think it was powerful, even when I go back to at the end of the series, when Hawkins was at, I felt like it was a National Mall.
The AIDS quilt.
The AIDS quilt. That for me was when I started crying as someone who is HIV positive. I gave, all right, girls, this was it. That was the moment for me where I was just like, wow.
When they pan out, oh my God.
I was like really taken aback and kind of speechless. And I didn't expect that. And when Hawkins told his daughter, that was the man I loved, I was just like, baby, the chills. It really did something, and it means so much. I didn't know I was going to get that. And I really hope that there can, because this is another example of a piece of work that really moved and impacted a community, and not just our community, but the community at large. Mm-hmm. We need more of that.
I would say, too, like, that moment, it gives me chills to think about, because, like, so many times during the filming process, we had roadblocks in our way. And in that day specifically, I think they had this huge crane that had to pan up and all of this stuff, and the rain was coming in. And I kid you not, like, it was like the divine, like, the rain held off, like, the exact moment until they got that beautiful shot that's so effective, and then all of a sudden. And it's like, it felt like to us, like, the ancestors were taking care of us, like, it felt like the entire time we were filming that, like, something divine was, like, guiding our path to make this possible. And, like, the only thing I want to say is, like, this is just the beginning. Like, I know we need more Black narratives, more queer narratives, more both. And I'm here to say, like, this is just the beginning for all of us being on TV and being represented. I really mean that. I really mean that.
Well, thank you.
Go ahead. You made me think of something.
Say it.
So the quilt, so I was in the New York City Gay Men's Chorus, and it's a queer organization. It's in the movie A Normal Heart, but a lot of people passed in the AIDS crisis, and the chorus has a quilt. Shit. We still use the quilt. A friend of mine passed when I was in the organization, and we put his name on. And, like, it's one of those things where, like, when I'm gone, my name will go there. And I just think about queer art. I think about the theme of this season and why it was so important for me to, like, think about people who've come before us and that their names be remembered and that they continue and we continue to speak their names and the contributions they've given and that we continue to have traditions that acknowledge just not who we are today, but just really our history. So fuck you for making me cry. But it's just, it really brought, like, me,
That I'm telling you.
Thank you.
Yeah, that was it. And it was just so powerful. I don't think I knew about that quilt, personally.
It's wild.
And so that's why I was just so taken aback. Like, I gotta do more research. I gotta do my reading. But Noah, we really thank you so much for joining us.
This
means a lot to
me.
Us. I'm so happy that you made the time and found it valuable to come sit at the surface level table with these group of girls.
I love it here.
So I just would like for you to let people know if they're interested in learning more about you and your projects, if you want to give, you know, us an exclusive. We'll take that as well.
Oh, about, like,
about what you have coming up.
Oh, no.
Just, like,
okay.
I
have some stuff coming up. You know, I've got a couple little film things coming out that I'm probably not supposed to say.
Okay.
And then I do have a big one coming out. And I'll say is it takes place in New York City. And you will know about it when I sign on the dotted line.
Yay.
But, yeah, lots of stuff in the works.
Okay.
And lots of queer narratives in the works too. That's going to be really exciting for us. But I guess you could follow on Instagram and keep up. I'm Noah, J-R-K-T-S, on Instagram. And yeah, lots coming. This will be good.
Okay. Well, with that, that is all the time we have this week. What a beautiful season.
Yeah.
What a beautiful season. So this season of Surface Level is presented by MOBI, Mobilizing Our Brothers Initiative. And if you enjoyed this episode, let's please keep the conversation going. Let us know your thoughts and questions at surfacelevelpodcast.com. And we'll be back next week for our finale, Beyond the Surface Level.
Ooh.
So remember, stay curious.